and welcome to episode 55 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I'm Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Pachko and Angie Han.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
So this week, our topics are the Insurgent Shatter Reality Experience event, whatever we want to call it. Then we're going to do our full review of the Lazarus Effect, and then we're going to wrap up with a new game. But we're going to kick things off with the Insurgent event, and it's called Insurgent Shatter Reality, and it's a traveling virtual reality experience. So it started off last night. Well, not technically, actually. I think it begins officially today, but we were able to attend an early press preview last night in New York City. And then after here, I believe it hits Chicago,
San Francisco, Austin,
Los Angeles, and Austin. I'm not sure what order it was in, though. That order might be wrong, but we will provide
that
information.
Yeah, but you can find, both Perry and I wrote about this. She wrote about it on Collider, I wrote about it on Pop Crush, and both of those articles have that all the information, so
yeah,
check those
out. Yeah, all the key details if you want to go visit it. And so Christy and I basically got to go down to some, I believe it's a Samsung store, because Samsung is doing this with Lionsgate, and they basically created this 4-minute 360-degree virtual reality experience. It's almost like kind of like a mini clip. And what it is you put this helmet on. I think it's called, it was the Gear VR helmet.
VR gear.
And you put the helmet on and the experience begins, and it puts you in the middle of an erudite lab with Janine Matthews, Kate Winslet's character. And the thing is, in the movie, she's trying to capture all the people who are divergent so that she could test those crazy serums on them. And I think it's to see how far their divergence goes or something like that, which is why Shailene Woodley's character is her top priority. But anyway, you are a divergent, you are being tested, and it puts you, you know, on the top of a building, and it throws birds in your face, and the building crumbles, and there's a train. It's basically all of, like, the fear landscape type situations, and it's just, you know, your reaction. There's really nothing you can do to control the experience besides look around and see what your environment is, but It's like a fun thrill. If you like virtual reality 4D type rides, or you're really into the Divergent series, it's pretty neat. It's just something different.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I know you were disappointed that it's not more interactive. It's just kind of you looking around. You don't actually engage with any of the things. But I thought it was really cool how it's, you know, you're basically just putting on this helmet with a phone in front of your eyes, which is really what it is. It's the Samsung Galaxy Note 4, they kept pointing out. But it's like the 3D works really effectively, and, you know, it's really strange to be able to turn around and, like, know that you're actually just in New York City, but just seeing, like, a landscape of decay behind you. It's really wild. And then they have this element set up that, like, I didn't realize was going to happen. So the first time I did it, I was, like, shouting because, like, all of a sudden the chair starts moving, and I was like, what the fuck? And I thought it was the subway going underneath me at first, and then I realized it was actually part of the experience, so cheers to that. And they actually have gusts of wind that hit you at key moments, so it feels like a very enveloping experience. It was really trippy. And then, like, you know, Miles Teller pops up and is all snarky and mean to you for a little bit. It was fun. I ended up doing it twice.
You need to look down. I'm telling you, it's like,
don't say why. Just
but, like, you need to be somewhat aware. I think it's funnier when you're aware of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, but I feel like had Mike Ryan not told me why to look down, if I did look down, I would have been like, whatever.
Look, the whole thing is try to, like, look at your belt. Look the whole way down and you'll see something that's kind of funny. But, right. Like, yeah, I thought it was really neat. I thought it was fun. It had me more excited about Insurgent because it's kind of painting these worlds and the shattering of reality. Like, that was all fun. I enjoyed it.
It's a pretty cool setup, too. I'm really big into, like, interactive new ways to promote movies. Like, when they did that The Purge breakout experience, I thought that was just brilliant. And this is kind of somewhat similar, except for the fact that it is a virtual reality thing and not a haunted house. But
yeah,
it's built the same way, where they take, like, a semi-truck, and they kind of almost gut it, and they put the virtual reality seats in the truck. So they basically are going to drive the truck around the country. And I have the list now. You can go to New York. There's going to be two locations in New York. Then it goes to Chicago. Then it moves to Los Angeles. Then San Francisco. And then it wraps up in South by Southwest during the festival in Austin. So, go see it. I think we had
fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even think you have to be a fan of Divergent. It's just a cool thing to, you know, step into virtual reality for 4 minutes.
It does go to show, though, that I think Insurgent is going to be way more fear landscape serum simulation heavy than Divergent, though. They are really
pushing that part of the
movie. Now we
move on to a
different
thing about serums.
Oh, shit. That's a perfect transition. I love it. All right. So
serum
the full
segue.
Review of the week is the Lazarus Effect. So, Angie, you're taking that.
Yes. All right, here is a synopsis. A group of medical students discover a way to bring dead patients back to life. I like it. Concise. It tells you exactly what it is and not too much or too little. So this is directed by David Gelb, who directed Jiro Dreams of Sushi, I believe, and it stars Olivia Wilde, Mark Duplass, Evan Peters, and Donald Glover. And the reason I'm telling you this is because when I saw the trailers, I thought it looked kind of generic, but I was like, oh, you know, but that director and cast make me wonder if it's actually going to be, I don't know, that was like the only thing that about the trailers that really stood out for me. And having seen it, I absolutely think it makes a difference. It's not, you know, it's not like a mind-blowingly good, it's not like a mind-blowingly great movie or anything, but it's a really solid horror thriller, I thought. It's really creepy. The fact that you have a director that knows what he's doing and has like a really artful eye means that a lot of the visuals look really cool. Like the opening credits, there's like this like weird, like, I think one of you described it as being kind of like American Horror Story where you're just like, I don't know what's going on, but it's creeping me out.
It was specifically the opening titles.
Yeah, that's what I meant. And because, and I think because the actors are someone that are people that we already kind of like and that are really good actors, as opposed to kind of the, you know, less, you know, sometimes when you watch a horror movie, you're like, oh, you didn't really spend that much time trying to find someone who's good at the acting part, did you? You just found someone who's affordable. I think it actually does make a difference. Mark Duplass is kind of a jerk, but he's really fun to watch. And Olivia Wilde is great as a terrifying demon lady person.
This is definitely one of those movies where you could tell that it's better off because every single person in every position on this film knew what they were doing and they knew how to bring like the best possible work out and how it all comes together to like elevate the story. It's like, I wrote this in my review about certain parts of the script. Like, I feel like certain elements of the story wouldn't be so exciting or thrilling or novel for that matter, but they really work well because the performances are really great, because it's shot really well, because there's certain like, you know, music cues that really make something like a million times more effective than maybe it had been when you read it on a page. So
oh, I think yeah.
Everyone really does their part in this. And I think that makes it a much higher quality, I guess, studio released horror film than we've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, it's really easy to imagine the version of this that was made with slightly less good people. That would have just been like just another, you know, lame horror movie that we would have seen, rolled our eyes at and been like, well, that was shitty. I'm sad I wasted my money. But you know, yeah, because everyone involved knows what they're doing. It's really good.
When I wrote up my review for the synopsis, I was like, I know this synopsis makes it sound like this is going to be a schlocky late night horror movie. But it's, and I described it as Frankenstein meets Carrie for a variety of reasons. But what I liked about it is it's a very intimate movie. Like, it's a low budget movie. And if you're really paying attention to that, you can see it because of the lack of gore and the car. But like, it doesn't feel like it's doing that because it's low budget. It feels like it didn't need a big budget because they knew how to build tension and how to use shadows to create a sense of suspense and a sense of uncertainty. And I think this movie just looked really cool. I think it was very aware of what it was doing, and the storytelling works great for me. And like, Olivia Wilde is interesting because she's not just the monster, she's also the first character we care about. So you have this conflict in you where you kind of want her to persevere, but you also want the other characters to survive, and neither of those things, like, you can't have both those things. And
that helps it make it so scary. It's a PG-13 rated horror film. You can't see like the scary blood and gore and stuff, but it is super freaky because you actually care about these people and it's fun to spend time with them and they like each other and you want their experiment to work out. Her and Mark
Duplass
make
miss the
make
gore.
You believe
like
that they
I can stand
it.
A gory movie, but like I didn't miss it here. I found that the kills and the scares were sufficiently freaky and upsetting, and like I described this movie as chilling, which I know is like kind of a cliche, but like I don't think a lot of horror movies now are chilling. I think they're graphic and they're gross, and this goes for chilling. Mm-hmm. And like I really like that. And also I just want to throw out Donald Glover is great in this. Like, he has a small role as like the lab assistant who has a big crush on Olivia Wilde, and it's a minor character that could have been totally forgettable, but it's like, and maybe it's partially because I'm used to seeing him doing comedy, but it was so, his performance was so small and so calibrated that like I got really connected to his character, and then like when he's in trouble, I was just like, oh no! Like, I was really, and it's funny because the three of us came out of there all kind of nervous to talk to each other, where we were all like, so what'd you think? And then we realized that all three of us liked it. But, like, the theater we went
nervous.
To...
I have no shame.
Well, we were the exception because, like, one, people who sat on either side of us have published reviews that they did not like the movie at all. And two, a lot of people were, like, heckling it, which my thought on that is that this is not we saw it at 42nd Street, and this is not a 42nd Street type movie. It's not a big showy movie where, you know, it's not like Paranormal Activity or something where it's like quiet, quiet, big, scared. Like, it doesn't do that. It's a lot subtler and it's a lot more cryptic. And like, I totally went on that ride. I found it really scary and refreshing and fun. And like, I'm excited to, I'd go see it again.
Not that Rotten Tomatoes is the be-all, end-all, but it's almost breaking my heart that this movie has an 18%. Like, someone cited it in the comment section of my review, and I just want to be like, I want to defend it for like 500 more reasons, because like, something like this really needs to like get a little credit here, because otherwise we're going to end up with more of this shit that just...
We're going to get more Annabelles, guys.
We're going to get more...
That is what we're going to end up with if people just keep knocking something like this down that was clearly made in a very thoughtful manner. It's like, his shot selection is just so freaking on point. My favorite, one of my favorite things at least about this movie is that he knows just the right times to use that show less tactic where seeing less will make you more scared. And so few horror movies know how to do that anymore.
Oh, yeah. There's also, so many horror movies now that you see, like, and they give it away in the trailers a lot of times, too, where there's just like, look,
yeah, don't watch
crazy,
the trailers for this, actually, before I forget. The trailers for this give way too much of the movie away. Please don't watch the trailers. Just trust us and go see Lazarus Effect. I'm sorry. Go on, Angie.
Well, I just wanted to point out one other thing I liked about it, which is how tight and taut it is. It's like 80-something minutes. It doesn't feel like that. It feels longer than that in a good way, where it just feels like they took exactly the amount of time they needed. No more, no less. And because of that, the movie doesn't get bogged down in mythology. It doesn't, like, it doesn't become some, like, extensive, boring-ass origin story about all the characters. I feel like a lot of movies, like, you know, they try to, like, oh, we have to build a whole world. This one, you know, this one tells you what you need to know. And it's everything you need to know. I felt like I actually had a pretty good sense of who the characters are and what they wanted and why they were there, which is not something that you get even in movies that spend way more time trying to develop the characters.
I feel like we can compare this, interestingly, to Project Almanac, where again you had a group
of people
who were like applying a scientific method and blah blah blah. In this, they do a lot of science talk too, but in this it wasn't enough that I got like lost. And on top of that, in this they do this really interesting thing where they set up the problem that they themselves have created and then they're trapped with it. Like in Project Almanac, I felt like they kept breaking the rules they themselves had established and I kind of lost the thread. But in this, they bring the girl that they accidentally killed back from the dead. And then she is, it's like in Pet Sematary where it's like, she came back wrong. And like, then they're stuck. They're stuck in this laboratory with her. And it was really exciting. And there was one point where they're like, we have to get out of here. And I thought, don't leave, because if you leave, all the tension is going to be sucked out of this movie. And like, it's really smartly created like that. It also reminded me of Splice, which I know might not be a thing a lot of people are excited to hear, but I like Splice. Like, yeah. Splice has problems in the third act and whatever. But it had that kind of like, there's an exploration of the genre we don't normally get to see. And like, it actually reminded me a lot of like 1970s horror, where we spent a lot of time figuring out who these people are and setting up what their normal is.
I feel
but
like
with just hints of ominous, so that when all that gets subverted, you can connect that to your own life of like, you know, that time you were home and what was that out of the corner of your eye? There's nothing in my apartment. It's fine. Like, it's able to, like, click into those real-world fears we have. And I just thought that made it really smart.
Even though a lot of the characters are talking, like, that science speak that you really might not understand, it is also a very human scenario where it's very easy to kind of put yourself in that situation and be like, well, he loves this person. What would I do if I was in that situation? Would I, you know, nix the experiment for the better or the greater good, or do I get what I want and like hold on to that slight possibility of saving her? I don't know. But
yeah,
this,
I think that's another, I think that's another aspect where the performances came so much into it, because, you know, you were talking about how this movie actually sets up the characters really well. And so much of that is in the performances, which are really, really specific. So that even though this movie doesn't spend a lot of time just devoted to like setting up like who is Donald Glover or whatever, like you kind of just in the way that he like looks at Olivia Wilde or Mark Duplass, or just the kind of expressions he has when he's reacting to things, you get a really good sense of who this guy is. So the other thing I wanted to bring up, Christy was comparing this to Project Almanac. Project Almanac has a 35% on Rotten Tomatoes. It is doing twice as well as the Lazarus Effect is.
I liked Project Almanac, but I would still put this above and beyond Project Almanac.
I am genuinely enraged. That, come on. God damn it. Like, you know, here's the thing. I'm going to blame part of this on the circumstances of the press screening we saw, because there were a bunch of critics in that screening, and That press screening was really bizarre in that normally they have people who go around and kind of like make sure that like people aren't using their phone. And like, this was the worst behaved crowd I've ever seen at a press screening. There was a guy behind me who was full on just repeating what was happening in the movie. Like, just seriously being like, oh, she got up. Like, at full volume, not at like, oh, inside, whatevers. And then like the guy, there was someone two pieces down from him, like two seats down from him, full on using an iPad, just like a whole lit up iPad. There was a guy three seats up who was playing games on his phone, which you can tell because it's like a flashlight. Like, it, and then people just started like yelling at each other at one point in the theater, and like no one is there to be like, hey, shut up and behave yourselves. So like, maybe that's part of it. Maybe people had a hard time getting into the movie with all these distractions, because I know that was a little bit of a struggle for me. But like, I'm sad. This is good. I'm...
I think maybe it's just that it's a simpler movie. I don't really know. But I completely agree with both of you that I know Perry actually liked Project Dalma Equus. I didn't, but it's still, either way, it's way better. Like, the characters are better set up, the world is better established, the rules are better explained. I thought on every level it was better. But I'm glad that I told you that, because then we got to see Christy's outraged face, which is always fun.
Apparently there are other things beyond Johnny Depp that make me super angry.
So we should probably start talking about some of the spoilers. Is there anything else that you guys want to throw out before we move into spoilers?
Dog.
Oh, yes. There's a dog in it.
Did I do that last time? Didn't I shout puppy last time? Before?
Yeah,
oh,
maybe.
Oh, it was Kingsman.
But
was
I feel puppies. Like that, if we get into that, I feel like that's a spoiler.
Okay, but they see the dog in the trailer. But yeah, there's dog discussion that needs to happen.
I will just say this. As much as I liked Olivia Wilde, that dog is the best actor in this movie.
All right, so we're in spoiler section right now, right?
Yes.
Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. So that scene, I think they actually spoil it in the trailer, too, where the dog is standing in her bed. Like, this sounds like I'm just being way over the top about this, but that dog, like, takes the perfect steps towards her, where it's so fucking freaky. Like, kudos to that animal wrangler, because that was, like, just like a spot-on, well-timed performance from the dog.
There's also a point where they're like, there's something wrong with this dog, and then they cut to it, and the dog has the so-I-give-no-fucks face that made me laugh. But I think it's supposed to. It's the dog is, they call him Rocky in the movie, but his name is Kato in the credits. But he was great. And it's like, it's a tricky thing when you're actually working with an animal in a horror movie. And I think they just used the animal flat out, because there was no point where he looked like a puppet. And
no.
it works
oh my
really
God,
beautifully.
No. That's one of the most expressive animals I've ever seen in a movie in my life.
He really
it was great.
Does, and I know it's absurd that we're spending this much time talking about the dog, but like, they also picked a dog that has that does really good puppy dog eyes. Like, you're supposed to sense that there's something off about this dog, and that he's like really not happy, and there's something weird and off, and that he knows it. And then so they chose a dog that's always just giving them these eyes that look desperate. And I was just like, God damn.
Yeah.
You got a really
like, she's
good
performance
like, out of that dog.
There's like a point where he just won't drink water. And the face the dog is making, and I know how this sounds, but the face the dog is making, I'm just like, this is not okay. Like, you know, she says something like, maybe he thinks he doesn't belong here. And you're like, yeah, no, look at his face. And it's like, I guess the casting of this movie being perfect actually extends to the animal
it
wrangling,
does.
But it's so good. Since we're in spoilers, there's a moment where one of the characters is like trying to make sure that the girl who came back is okay. And then she all of a sudden turns and she's in that girl's nightmare. And it was so smartly done. It's like such a smooth transition into that like I literally went, because like I was just like, not okay. Like it was upsetting to just, I didn't feel prepared for that, but in the best way.
Honestly, that's another moment that I thought should have been hokey, but wasn't, because it was just done really well. Everything from like the way it was shot to like the way the actors were reacting in that moment. Like it actually felt really like, I was like, oh, this is really creepy. Like,
they handle the whole cliche science versus religion thing very well, where it doesn't feel forced in your face. It really feels like the characters are believing what they are saying. And then when they get to that whole, I guess like you could call it a supernatural element to the film, it sells pretty well.
So we should wrap up soon, but one last thing. Which kill did you like the best?
I think I liked Donald Glover's.
Me too.
Because it was that scene had so much meaning, and there was such like a good performance leading up to the actual death. And then that death was, it's a perfect example of not showing something, but kind
yes.
of implying it, and it makes it even more crazy and terrifying.
It was
yeah.
way more creepy than if we actually graphically saw him get crushed to death. Like, you just like imagine, you're just like, ah!
And, have you ever seen that? I've never seen that, and I watch a lot of horror movies.
I feel like, yeah, I just thought it was smart because This is going to sound really dark. I watch a lot of those investigation discovery shows. But, like, sometimes they talk about how, like,
snuff films. Jesus.
I may be a terrible person. The way they describe, like, certain killings that are super personal is sometimes the person will, like, hide the body or cover the body because they feel bad about it after. And, like, watching that scene, that was playing into it. And for me, that was the most affecting scene because I both felt terrible for him, but, like, in a very minor level, understood why she did it. Not that I agree, but I felt that the character development of why she does what she does, I was like, no, I get it, but this is really horrifying. And, like,
before we wrap up, too, what did you think of the ending?
I have mixed feelings because, one, I want to see more of this character, so I was kind of okay with it. And two, it kind of undid some of the things I thought were interesting.
Oh, I think it got me pumped. I, like, walked out of the theater with, like, an extra pep in my step because it didn't just end there. I was, like, all hyped about what happened and what could happen, and it left me with a lot more to think about versus it just ending.
I thought the ending was okay. It kind of sets up a sequel that is going to obviously go bigger, which one of the things I liked about this one was how small and intimate it was. So, but we'll see. I mean, there's a good movie to be made out of it, probably. So overall, I just feel like this movie was what could have been a really generic, you know, run-of-the-mill horror movie that's really elevated by really good work from all the people involved.
So, I agree. Go see it. We all loved it.
All around.
All right. On to the next section, the games. Christy, this one's yours.
Yeah, so last week in honor of the Oscars, our game was that we wanted you to tell us what an Oscar category is that you thought the Oscars should have and who should win it. And our winner is Kat Lester, or at Cinefeline, who said, best film not eligible for this year's Oscars, but should have been nominated in nearly all categories, The Babadook.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Kat Lester, we looked at your bio on Twitter, and I have it here. PhD student of children's horror films, film and cat lover fueled by large amounts of coffee, wine, and feminist rage. And we're a little concerned that you're our baby from the future somehow. So, thank you. Also, what happens in the future? You can tweet at us. So next week, what, we were just not going to say that? Whatever. Anyway, next week, our new game is specifically about the madness that hit the internet yesterday, and not the dress. We're over the dress. We're going to go Llama Chase, guys. In the inevitable Hollywood adaptation of The Llama Chase, what would the title be? So tell us what the title of your Llama Chase movie would be. Tweet at us, Popcorn Prosecco, and we'll pick our favorite next week.
All right, so that is a wrap on episode 55 of Popcorn and Prosecco. Like Christy said, you can catch us on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. Please like us on Facebook as well. And then we have our own website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on iTunes. Go there, like, comment, rate, all of that. And then you can also find the three of us all over the web as well. Christy, you want to go first?
I'm at Christy Puchko on Twitter. That's at KristyPuchko. And you can find my career highlights, because I write everywhere, at decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
I'm on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And I am at PNemiroff on Twitter, and you can catch my writing on collider.com. So thank you guys so much for watching, and we'll see you next week.
Did I just die?